Hello and welcome to Masters of Our Domain, the podcast that was once about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld and is now about, temporarily, Spartacus, Blood and Sand. I am Milo Edwards and I'm joined, as ever, by my co-host Phoebe Roy.
Hello.
There she is. And there's no Patrick Wyman this week because he's on a plane. If you want to know, if you mark that on your Patrick Wyman bingo cards, if you're trying to track down Patrick Wyman, he's on a plane right now. Probably won't still be on that plane when you're listening to this because these are recorded several days ahead. But could be on the plane back by now, possibly.
So if you want to put a pin in your Pat map, that's something which is available to you.
Yeah, yeah. If you're trying to do a sort of Wyman 9/11.
Yep.
Nine a Wyman? I don't know.
Nine a Wyman, yeah. Yeah. All right. No. Okay. Yeah. No. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
Let's go with that.
Gathering 19 of our biggest historians.
Well, I mean, it was going to be 20, but one got stuck under a barbell. And another took too large a bite out of a sandwich.
Yeah.
And has to recuperate. So they're not going to be there either.
It was so strange. They all turned up at the classics department and they wanted to learn how to translate Latin, but none of them wanted to learn how to compose. I mean, we didn't think anything of it at the time. We just thought it was on.
They wanted to learn how to find the main verb, but they weren't interested in learning the subjunctive. So that immediately set my alarm bells running.
Cicero rising from the dead. Oh, you think you can find the main verb?
You think you can find your main verb? Well, I'll tell you what, it's in 3 pages time.
God, that fucking guy.
That fucking guy with his verbs.
I've still not forgiven him, and it's been over 2,000 years. I think he's got a lot to answer for.
I can't believe it's been 2,000 years since that slag hit a main verb 3 paragraphs away from the...
Still freaks my nut out to this day. Yeah. God, Danny Dyer and Cicero. Now, there's a combo.
Danny Dyer should play Cicero. That's what I think.
How long are you going to fucking wind us up, Catalina? You're pushing your fucking luck, son.
I've only got one thing to say, and that is sum quives Romanum.
Is it just me, or are the Catalanarians taking a fucking piss?
Danny Dyer's Philippics. There you go. There's a bit. Run with that.
The big Phil. The big Phil. I'm not keen on fucking Mark Antony either.
What is that? Philip. I'll tell you what that is. That's a bunch of poncers mincing about.
Yeah.
Mincing about in Egypt on his boat, dressed up like Apollo with his foreign tart. No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so, my son.
With his foreign tart.
It's gone into Ray Winston there. It's strayed from Danny and it's now in Ray.
It's amazing how really a lot of the kind of superficial politics of the late Roman Republic are just kind of the same as the politics of now. Nothing substantive has really changed. Mincing about with this foreign tart.
Meghan Markle.
Yeah, literally.
That literally does seem to be the tabloid take on Prince Harry, mincing about with his foreign tart. It's quite fun, really, to be like a really kind of like vociferous anti-royalist of any kind of description, because like I'm not particularly keen on Ms. Markle, but like it's never for the reason that people who like make a whole thing about hating her is like. People always read it. It's not like, oh, do you hate her as well? Yeah, I hate her because she was really disrespectful to Catherine. And I was like, no.
What?
No, I hate her because I hate rich people. I don't like royals and I don't like rich people and I don't like rich people who want to be royals.
Yeah.
That's my position. that's my flawless.
What I hate about her most
flawless politics.
Is that she obviously thinks we're all mugs because she said in an interview, I didn't know anything about the royal family until I met Prince Harry. And it's like, immediately like, you're American. You're not a goat herd from Nepal. Like, you're not like, you've not been not exposed to any, what are you talking about?
I would have found it quite charming if he'd married a goat herd from Nepal.
Yeah, that would have been sick.
That would have been sick. Now that's a fairy tale. That's a fairy tale romance.
Yeah, there you go. That would have been it. I mean, and to be fair, wouldn't have been a million miles out of the way for Prince Harry after his whole, I finally found myself in Botswana. I could see, you know, a few sliding doors changes. That man could have been up a mountain in Nepal.
Lads, have you spoken to your goats?
Check in on your goats.
Check in on your goats. There's a mental health crisis in the goats.
Goats mental.
Goats mental, exactly. You need to check in on your goats.
Yeah. If you want them to produce good cheese, they've got to be,
they've got to be more cheerful.
Happy, thriving. Yeah.
Can't have depressed goats. That's just upsetting.
Guys, if you don't work on the goat's mental health, you're really going to harsh the cashmere.
You can't harsh the cashmere.
It's going to be coarse. No one wants that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Prince Harry. Our himbo prince.
Are we really not? Are we really not?
I do sort of have a soft spot for Prince Harry. He's such a moron. But he's just like he just wanted to lead a different life.
Yeah, I suppose he did, really, didn't he?
Prince Harry would have been so happy as like a sort of faintly upper middle class guy who got a 2-2 from Leeds and joined the Paras as a junior officer. Like he would have been so happy with that life.
That's very specific.
Yeah.
And it's,
well, because he almost got that life. He had like a sort of sliding doors moment where he was that guy for like 2 minutes.
What would he have studied at least?
Sports science.
No, surely not. No. Surely he's a kind of history and politics guy. Not a sports science guy.
I don't think Prince Harry knows anything.
They're very specific, the sports science guys. They're often very sensible.
Very sensible.
Yeah. They're a sensible bunch. They're kind of practical. They visit their grandmas a lot.
They visit their grandmas a lot. Love that for you.
Yeah. I like a lad who visits his grandma.
Love that for the sports science guy.
Love that for the sports lad. You know what? In all fairness, I'm probably just thinking about someone just like somebody that I know that did sports science. So yeah. This is a sample size of one.
Yeah, you've got like a very specific sports science guy in mind.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, shout out, Chris.
Shout outs to Chris, the sports science man.
Shout out to Chris. Hope you're well.
Still out there, still thinking. I wish you well.
I hope your grandma's all right. She sounded like a laugh.
Specifically your nan. That's who we're...
Specifically Chris's nan, who I assume is no longer with us, to be honest with you, but...
That was so Partridge, it was bordering on Maidly. That was absolutely incredible from you. Right, well, I think unfortunately it's probably no longer with us. I mean, Christ, she must have been in her 80s. I mean, it'd be a hell of an innings, but I'd love to see it.
Right, look.
Great stuff.
Right.
Right.
What number episode of Spartacus?
It's episode 5, season 1, Blood and Sand. And what an episode it is. I honestly find this show so hard to follow.
Yeah. Well, Pat's not here. So you have free reign to say what you really feel.
Yeah, well, the only man who actually knows what's going on in this show, Pat Wyman.
This is a safe space. You've got the Spartacus talking stick, and you can say whatever you want. You've got the little leathery mask made up of faces. You're currently holding it. You have the floor. Let's go.
Okay, right. So this episode is called Shadow Games. I'm going to depart from our usual format here, and I'm just going to read the Wikipedia summary because okay. I just for my own benefit, I need to understand what the fuck happened in this episode. Okay. As the summer heat continues, immediately amazing plot point straight off they keep referencing how hot it is.
Yeah.
But it's not relevant to the plot in any way.
It is relevant because at the end, Spartacus brings the rain. And that's what like gets the crowd back on his side. Because the crowd hate him.
Well, I think he makes it rain.
Yeah.
By beheading a man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they think. I mean, they're not, you know, they're not all meteorologists.
I think they're not all.
Not
I think
all
they're
of them. Some of them.
Not all of them. I mean, a good proportion of them are, like a surprising number.
Surprising number of meteorologists in Capua in 73 BC.
They're imposing a level of paganism to the Romans that I don't even think the Romans had. This show,
what the gods have made it rain in.
Yeah,
but that is why it's relevant that it's really hot.
Right. Okay. All right. Consider that issue just dismissed, or at least to have had a pin put in it. As the summer heat continues, enemies Spartacus and Crixus are commanded to take on an unbeaten champion named Theocles, the Shadow of Death. Doctore, being the only warrior to have fought Theocles and lived, is charged with preparing the two men for the drought-breaking Primus, but receives little satisfaction from either man.
I've got an issue with Doctore. I think he's a liar.
Okay.
I think that he is. He's a little bit of a. I think he's a little bit of a pub bore. I think like every kind of semi supernatural kind of gladiator monster who they come up against, Doctor is like for him. Only one who's survived fighting in mind. Only one. That was me. One thing I would say, if you are fighting him, don't take your eye off him. That's how I did it. That's how I did it. Last lad who fought him didn't listen to me. He started mucking around. He started picking flowers. You know what happened?
Took his eye off him.
Yeah. Don't take your eye off him. This guy who they're fighting is sort of a kind of monster guy. He's not a real guy. He's not a guy. He's a kind of monster. He looks like Prince Viggo from Ghostbusters 2.
I don't get that reference, but
What? Because you'd never seen Ghostbusters, had you, when we watched it first?
No, I've only seen the first one, but due to the podcast.
That really is extraordinary to me. But anyway, so you've never seen Ghostbusters 2?
No.
No.
Okay, I'm the wrong age bracket for Ghostbusters.
All right.
Well, I mean, there's not that much between us in age, but you're like bang on the right age for Ghostbusters.
Well, no, not really. It came out when I was a baby.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Well, closer anyway.
I think what it must have been is I think that it must have been like very, very much on like TV, like around Christmas when I was like kind of 5 or 6.
I think that's like a
missing piece of what your kind of cultural background is. It's the stuff that was on TV for special occasions when you were roughly 5 or 6.
Yeah, yeah.
And those are the films that you remember from your childhood, even if they were out before you were born.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
But I have only seen Ghostbusters 2 once because it scared me, and so I didn't watch it again.
I mean, it's a good reason not to watch.
The thing is, what they don't tell you, when you're busting ghosts.
Didn't know that for a second there.
When you're busting ghosts, you've got to remember that you can't hit them with anything, with your fist. With any kind of weapon. So you've got to come up with something a little bit different, a little bit special, a little bit spicy to bust a ghost. If you look up Prince Viggo from Ghostbusters, then you will see that this is a very good and accurate reference.
All right, okay. Viggo the Carpathian.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. Mm.
He's this sort of non-specifically medieval sack of shit. He lives in a painting. He comes out of the painting and he's like, eh.
Okay. Yeah.
There was a really interesting I'm about to say something which is like a kind of a parody of myself. There was a really interesting long read about the actor who played Prince Viggo out a few years ago, which is worth reading, to be honest with you, because it is interesting. But yeah, that's what I mean by Prince Viggo. So yeah, like I don't really understand why like everyone who they fight is like not a person. Like,
yeah,
they're all like monsters.
Well, because everything they do has to be like impossibly epic.
Yeah, or like monster adjacent.
Yeah, yeah. This guy's, you know, he's got big old scars. He's like kind of albino.
Yeah, sort of. But like he's horrible. I don't like him.
No, I don't care for him.
I mean, like him.
I just want to draw your attention back to the Doctore being the only warrior to have fought Theocles and lived his childhood, preparing the two men for the drought-breaking Primus, but receives little satisfaction from either man. Scarcely has there been a more innuendo-laden sentence.
That's saucy. That's saucy, all right.
And we're going to get to eroticism later, I think, because the final fight is really the level of almost carry-on-style horn that's going on in the arena during that is really quite something.
Yeah.
So Spartacus tries to find common ground with his archenemy, but Crixus remains stalwartly opposed to sharing any of the glory. Meanwhile, after the visit of a fertility priestess, Lucretia is denied a chance to conceive as Crixus, distracted by Navia, declines her advances. Meanwhile, the wounded Basiatus continues his own investigations into the attempt on his life and exacts blood vengeance on Ovidius, the cousin of Magistrate Calavius and his family. In the arena, Theocles is finally bested by Spartacus and the drought breaks once Theocles dies, earning Spartacus the title of Bringer of Rain. However, Crixus is critically wounded in the encounter and is taken away to recover.
Yeah.
They're finally mates.
Yeah, I mean, sort of. Not really.
Yeah.
Begrudging respect, like Maverick and Iceman.
Yeah, yeah, bullshit. You can be mine. I did feel bad for old Crixus when he's being summoned to shag the Domina, and then you know she's just sort of she's just like discussing the shagging with him, and then she's like, "You're not even fully erect," and it's like, "Well, I should think he's not. He's a man in his 30s. All you've done is vaguely discuss the prospect of shagging. Like, what were you expecting, love?" And that's hardly going to help his confidence, is it? Those kinds of remarks.
Look, you cannot tell me that I'm straying into Maidly if you say stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? That was actually quite Vernon Kay of me. Well, that's hardly going to help his confidence, is it? You're not going to get a lob on with her criticising you.
Back to Vernon Kay, surely. Let the Domina see the gladiator.
Oh, that's Paddy McGuinness.
I know it's Paddy McGuinness, okay, but it's the right. Same. But it's to my mind, it's a similar species.
Yeah, yeah.
Vernon and Paddy are very much of a piece.
Yeah,
spiritually, emotionally.
Who was I talking to about Paddy McGuinness recently? It was another comedian, and we were discussing that Paddy McGuinness had just been... Oh, that's it. Paddy McGuinness has been brought in to replace Greg Wallace on Inside the Factory.
On what?
And I find Paddy McGuinness's status as just instant sub for any British TV opportunity very funny. Like, call McGuinness, he'll be available.
He's Big Sam. Give it to McGuinness for the rest of the
season. He's a caretaker presenter till the end of the season.
Yeah, give it to
He's a safe pair of hands.
Well, that's what they should have done in the arena. They should have done a no likey, no lighty system. That would have been much that would have been much better, much more entertaining, a lot less bloodshed.
Yeah. You sort of at the end of the fight you get to decide whether you're gonna take them to the Isle of Fernando's, and that's what the Emperor's doing the whole thumbs up for.
Ever happened to take me out? Does it still exist? Because it feels like it finished very, very abruptly in a way that TV shows don't normally, unless there's been a scandal.
Let's see. Take Me Out, TV show.
Let's find out.
It appears that the last season aired in December 2019.
Oh, yeah, another casualty of COVID, was it?
Yeah, I guess so. You know,
that would be quite funny if that's the reason that there's no more Take Me Out, was because they just couldn't work out a way of filming it.
You couldn't just have 30. Well, they couldn't have those women stood, you know, 2 meters apart because there were so many of them, there wouldn't be room in the studio.
They could put them in little kind of isolation, kind of, you know, sort of girl.
Oh, that would be
tanks.
Fun. Each Take Me Out lady in a sort of hermetically sealed chamber.
Yeah, exactly. In a kind of girl viewing tank.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. That's good.
American.
That was a baffling show. I mean, for American listeners,
you know what? Don't just forget about it.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It was a dating show where they used to bring in a man down a big tube. and he'd go and stand in front of a sort of...
He did go down a tube, like in the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Why did he go down the tube?
And then he'd stand in front of a sort of firing squad of women who look like they're going for a night out of Vodka Revolution.
Like kind of hollering women in bodycon.
Yeah.
In like
God, it was sponsored by Jane Norman. It might like as well have been that show.
Knockoff versions of Hervé Leisure dresses.
Yeah. And then they would basically play humiliating VTs of the man, where his family would say stuff like, he used to wank into a sock when he was little. And then he'd watch
I don't know why he's not got a girlfriend. He's lovely.
Yeah. And then as various women just...
He should have a girl to do that for him.
Turned their light off until he was left with two women, and then he got to choose between them.
And then he always just chose whoever he thought was the fittest. So it was...
Yeah,
obviously, like, fine. But then, like, every point up until the choosing is irrelevant.
Mm, yeah. It's also just very funny. Like, I think it's such a funny show to be on as a woman, because you're like you have to decide to put yourself in the final two, basically.
Yeah.
And there's not, because you know, if that was like if the genders were reversed, like every man's light would still be on, or like so many. Like, you could find out anything about that woman. Like, as long as she was fit enough, men would be like, yeah, fine, no problem.
Yeah, that's true.
No issue.
I like this. I like the segments of this show where we just talk like a kind of lads mag from the mid 90s. I like that. I like Maxim Corner. I think that's a fun element of this show.
Yeah, yeah.
And a surprising element of this show as well, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is the zoo section of the podcast.
This is how we know that Miss Andrew's not real, right? Because nobody on earth has a bleaker view of men than other men.
That is certainly true, yeah. Yeah, because well, I know it too well. I think
they did try and do a kind of reverse take me out, but as you correctly surmised, it didn't work.
Yeah, it came into contact with reality at Mach 1 speed.
Paddy McGuinness shaped reality.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do sometimes find myself having to say, oh, this isn't a defense of men.
To be clear.
Yeah. Because I'm so far from defending men, I sometimes even forget that I have to clarify that that's not what I'm doing. But sometimes, you know, when I'm just meeting someone for the first time or whatever, and I'm making some sort of observation, and I suddenly think like, oh, wait, yeah. Oh, this isn't a defense of men, by the way. Just so you know.
I wouldn't venture
to do that. I know that's an uphill battle.
Just so we're clear, sweetheart.
Absolutely. The bar for men continues to be on the floor, and I continue to step over it. It's beautiful.
What did you find confusing about this episode, apart from Crixus not being able to get it up?
No, I didn't find that confusing. I found that actually deeply relatable and possibly triggering. a woman who's done nothing asking you why you're not hard yet. Yeah. You know what, Crixus, we're in one struggle, you and I.
Oh dear.
However, the bit that was really confusing was the whole subplot with John Hannah murdering people.
Yeah, so he was targeted by a rival in the prior episode, which I don't think we discussed because we got too
we got
too fixated on the nip-tuck portion.
I hate to get targeted by a rival. You know what really grinds my gears?
Yeah, don't, like, if you're my rival, don't target me, because it's mean.
Mm.
It's horrid. Don't do it. I don't want you to. God, I don't even want you to target me. So he's been targeted. So he finds out who this is, and so goes and kills his family, and then gets one of his slaves to presumably kill the angelic child who's not that happy about having his entire family killed.
No, no.
You know, you know in a show about Rome, there's an angelic child. Ugh. It might not show it, but you know, nothing good is going to happen.
It's not going
to
end well.
Angelic child. Yeah. Not going to end well for the angelic child, unfortunately.
The thing is, this child you've got here is a bit too angelic. I wouldn't go touting that around Rome.
Yeah.
If I were you.
Yeah. Could you make him a bit? I don't know. Make him a bit less charming, a bit less angelic. Could you? I don't know. Teach him a really irritating song or something.
Yeah. Because at the moment, he's really in danger of being too angelic.
Can you teach him just a really awful personal habit? Can you just make him a bit more off-putting?
Yeah.
Just a little bit more off-putting. It's easy enough to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Make him a bit more off-putting.
Well, as well he should be.
Why don't you get him really, really interested in a really, really obnoxious cartoon, which he then wants to kind of quote from, maybe sing the theme tune of, perhaps talk about quite a lot. Something, you know, good and off-putting. Get him really into Paw Patrol.
Yeah, why not do that?
Why not?
Get him into Ruddy Bloody Paw Patrol.
That'll make him less angelic. Quick smart.
Or get him into Bluey.
Oh, no, Bluey's delightful.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, afraid so. Afraid so. Not, yeah, but, well, whereas Paw Patrol, not delightful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, see what's going on in Los Angeles at the minute. Paw Patrol have shown up and they are not on the right side of history.
No, yeah, that is unfortunate, isn't it? When you saw the, Paw Patrol shot Bluey with a rubber bullet at the...
Yeah, Paw Patrol have raided the restaurant where Tramp from Lady and the Tramp works.
Yeah. Did you see that video of that protest cop just shooting an Australian journalist with a rubber bullet?
I did.
Who was
pretty
just
fucked up.
Like well out of the way, very clearly speaking into a camera.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up.
Just mad.
Yeah.
She's not even stood in front of the protest. She stood like off to the side. And you just watch him just turn and just point it directly at her. It's like,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, he actually does it deliberately. It's fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well seen, man.
Yeah, well, it's good that it's going well over there.
Yeah. Not great, is it? You don't want to add Paw Patrol to the mix. It's an insult to injury at this point.
Yeah, no.
You know what? I've got to confess something. I am not entirely positive what Paw Patrol is. I know it's like dogs that are cops, but I don't really know what's the narrative arc. Where's the tension? Where's the romance? I don't know.
They're not only one of them's a cop, I think.
What? So what are the rest of them?
There's like cop, firemen. That they're all like, you know, like
they're not the village people.
Emergency. Yeah. Exactly. They're the village dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it for this show that we looked up how many different iterations the village people have been through?
I think so. I think it was a sort of
and like that they've
Proustian recollection
kind
of
they've
doing
kind
that.
Of changed the jobs, and the only one that has remained constant is I think the fireman.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it just goes to show it's hard to kind of fuck. I'm trying to think of the word. You know when someone's job becomes obsolete due to technology.
Yeah.
That was what I was trying. Even the Native American found himself falling by the wayside.
Like which of the village people have become obsolete? They haven't got that. There's not like a village person who's like a travel agent.
Well, they should have like one of the village people should be a recruiter,
a mid-weight copywriter.
Yeah. Paper boy. just wearing the news cap and nothing else.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, the First Nations guy was not. I don't think he was first. Maybe he was. I'm not sure. Anyway, the personnel of the village people has gone through a surprising number of iterations. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, they're kind of like the sugar babes of their day, really.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Whatever it is, it's gone. So Paw Patrol, they're all just like, kind of
they're little. Let me pull up
cop supporters.
I mean, I don't know why I know so much about Paw Patrol. I mean, I've just got like nieces and nephews. Yeah, so I'm looking at an image now. One of them's clearly a fireman. One of them's clearly a copper. I feel like there's a third one that looks like maybe a builder. He seems to be riding a sort of a bulldozer. He looks a bit like the Churchill dog.
Look, I'm sorry. You can't have a dog on a building site. How would you get a helmet to fit them?
Well, he's wearing a helmet in the image. It's clearly specially made. I'm sending you the image I'm looking at. Okay. There's also the guy. There's like a wee boy who's like sort of the ringleader, and he looks a bit like Stuart Goldsmith.
Who's Stuart Goldsmith?
he's a stand-up comedian. Oh, okay. But I think you're going to really enjoy how much the boy from Paw Patrol looks like Stuart Goldsmith. Okay. I'm sending you I'm pulling that up for you now, Jamie.
Thanks very much. Oh God, yeah, he really does. That's really funny. He's got the same hair.
And when I tell you also, that's really the energy that Stuart Goldsmith has. Like, leader of a pack of cartoon dogs that entertain children is so Stuart Goldsmith.
So what? So this boy in the Paw Patrol, what's his problem? What's he up to?
I don't know. He's sort of
a child who's only friends with dogs.
Yeah, well, he's like on the sort of graduate scheme, you know, he's coordinating all of the... I'm intrigued by the lady dog, the bitch on the left.
The bitch on the left. He's the boy is a diversity hire.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. We need a human on the lineup.
We need a human, otherwise HR will be sniffing our asses. So the lady dog, this is really, really progressive. The lady dog has big eyelashes and a little pink hat, and she doesn't seem to have a job.
Yeah, well, they seem to be like pink eye goggles, I would say. I think they're like old-timey, as though she's flying a plane or something.
Okay, so the lady dog is a pilot from 1922.
Yeah, she's a plane, that one. I'm seeing another image now.
Okay.
She's like, she's got a sort of jetpack type situation.
Okay, so I see a firefighter. I see, you think that's a builder.
That would appear to be the implication, yeah.
What's that? What's this little green fucker? What's he up to?
The green fellow, he appears to be recycling.
He looks like
he's wearing a recycling necklace.
It looks like a bomb vest. That's the terrorist dog.
The one dog who's like, the kuffar will learn.
That's the improvised explosive device.
He's constantly being arrested by Paw Prevent.
So okay, so the Dalmatian's a firefighter.
Yeah. You've got sort of Churchill who's like a builder.
So Churchill's the builder. What, the orange guy, what's he?
Of course, the German Shepherd is the fash one. The orange one, I feel like he's some kind of... Is that marine rescue? Is that an anchor on his necklace?
Oh, yeah. So he's the Coast Guard.
I guess so, yeah. There's no paramedic in the team.
Yeah, well, we know why. Mm. We know why. Why is there a pilot? And why is there a pilot from 1922? Why is that Amelia Earhart, the dog? Amelia Earhart.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go. They should have hired me. Maybe that is what she's called.
I often think about that tweet where it's like, surely there's nothing more embarrassing than being a dog and discovering that your ear's been inside out for ages.
wasn't there a tweet about the dog going to the job interview and then realizing that their ear was inside out, or is that the same thing?
I don't know. It sounds different to me, but yeah, I haven't seen that one. But
okay, you know. So Paw Patrol girl, the Paw Patrol girls. Oh, there are three Paw Patrol girls.
Oh.
They consist primarily of Everest, Sky, and Sweetie.
Right, great stuff.
So what do they do?
Everest.
Oh, they've got God, there should I don't think there should be enabled comments on the Paw Patrol wiki. That's my position.
And it's a reasonable one, I would argue.
So one of the comments has said, why is this on popular pages plus some feet pages?
Wow.
Wow. Wow. Oh. Sweetie is not part of the team.
Right.
You know what? I feel like...
Is that because she's a woman?
Probably.
There's a glass ceiling in the Paw Patrol universe.
Yeah, probably. I feel like we have massively strayed from the point here.
Yeah. Yeah, we've strayed from the light of Spartacus Blood and Sand.
We've strayed from the light.
Which I have to say, not a well-made show.
It's not a terrifically well-made show. I am not that keen on... I think that the scheming MILFs aren't scheming enough.
Yeah.
They're not conniving enough. I mean, like, I know that, like, we've been a bit spoiled by Attia of the Julii. Mm. I'm aware of that. But, you know, the other conniving slags had their moments.
Well, they're just horny, and that's not enough.
Yeah, and they're not even, like, interestingly horny. They're just, like...
Mm.
They're like,
yeah, like horny is an important element of the conniving MILF, or indeed the conniving slag, but it's not enough.
Yeah, that's the mistake they've made. They think that that's like the sole trait, but it has to. It's like turmeric. You need the black pepper in order to activate the turmeric's anti-inflammatory effects. You can't have a MILF who's just horny. That has to be one of a kind of constellation of traits. She needs something to activate.
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me.
She needs something to activate her horniness, to activate and animate it. She can't just be horny, because then that's just one flavor, that's just one texture. You need a variety.
Yeah, because at one point...
Because like Attia of the Julii was horny and also politically motivated, for example.
Mm, yeah, she was politically horny.
Politically horny.
Because at one point, old Batiatus is going out, and he sort of invites a sort of like lesbian play date round for his wife.
Yeah.
And they're kind of hornily going on about who they'd like to see die in the arena. But it's really, there's a lot of like lingering glances and like, also like, yeah, I'd love to see his blood shed in the arena.
Oh, well, that's Glabus's wife.
Oh, right.
Like the extremely posh girl who cannot act.
Right, yeah.
And I don't know what, like, I don't know what the point is of having her as a character, really. She's sort of valueless. She fancies a bit of Crixus as well.
Right, yeah.
But she also fancies the guy who looks like the 7-Up logo.
What?
The guy who Spartacus is mates with, who keeps going on about his wife.
Oh, right.
Who looks like the 7-Up logo.
He looks like the 7-Up logo.
Yeah, look up the 7-Up logo and you'll see what I mean.
I mean, I feel like I can picture the 7-Up logo, but I don't understand how a man could possibly look like it.
Well.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now and I don't...
They couldn't up until this man.
I mean, there's a handy infographic here entitled The 7-Up Logo Through the Years.
Oh, that's nice. Mm. Yeah, so she is a conniving slag, but she's just kind of really into gladiators as like a kind of category of man.
Mm-hmm.
But like honestly, I feel like all the stuff with Lucretia being a conniving slag is a little bit undermined by her main storyline being the fact that she can't have kids. Like, a proper conniving slag isn't fussed in much.
Or she'd just connive her way into having them.
Yeah, exactly. Which I suppose is what she's doing when she tries to finagle Crixus into being the father of a child. But yeah, like, it's a bit of an odd episode, this one, because we're sort of just waiting for it all to kick off, for like the rebellion to kick off. Mm. And at this point, it's a little bit unclear what is going to be Spartacus's breaking point. What is going to be sufficiently humiliating or sufficiently evil, or, you know, like, what's going to make him go like, you know what, I've had just about a bloody enough of this. It's sort of not clear. And I'm a bit like, I don't really care about the other gladiators or about Batiatus or about Crixus.
No.
Crixus having the love story with the slave girl.
No, I'm very uninterested in that.
I'm just a bit like, either have Spartacus fighting another kind of horrid creature, that looks
monster
like...
Monster of the Week.
Yeah, his Monster of the Week that looks like he's sort of been partially made out of plasticine. Either that, or let's get moving. Let's get moving with the slave rebellion. Like, why is he not rebelling?
Yeah.
He's not doing enough rebelling for me.
Yeah, we do get a bit more hot and heavy shagging, don't we, with Batiatus and Lucretia early on in the episode.
Yeah.
They're keen to get that in, which then does make it quite funny when the fertility priestess comes round. She's like, are you copulating? She's like, are we ever?
I think so.
If anything, it comes into almost every scene that we're both in.
He's quite an odd choice, really, John Hannah. He's not what I would necessarily think of as particularly a shagger.
Yeah, he has that sort of, you know, kind of like, he's Mark Darcy, not Daniel Cleaver, you know.
Sorry, I'm just musing on that. I think that I could have guessed for 1,000 years and I never would have put you down for a Bridget Jones guy.
I wouldn't really say that I'm a Bridget Jones guy. It's just like, it's culturally significant in the UK. You can't really be a man of my age and not be at least passingly familiar with Bridget Jones.
Yeah, but to the
Having said that, I do quite like it.
To the extent when you're making analogies. I think
it was the perfect analogy. That's why it came to mind.
I think that's more than the cultural weather. I think that's being a fan.
A fan. I did see the new one. I quite liked it.
You've been outed. I really like the new one. I cried a lot in the new one. Yeah. It's a bit much, actually. It's a bit sad.
Yeah.
It's the new one. I really enjoyed it, yeah. I didn't like the... I wasn't so keen on the second one.
The Edge of Reason.
The Edge of... See, look, I'm sorry. Outing yourself. Outing yourself as not just Bridget Jones sympathizer, but active super fan. I like the first one very much. I think it's delightful.
Yeah, I don't actually. I couldn't really tell you what happens in any of the Bridget Jones movies apart from the first one and the last one.
Interesting.
I have a vague recollection of her being in a Thai prison.
Yeah, the Thai prison debacle is
amazing. Like that, we could be discussing the Bridget Jones series of films, or equally the career of Gary Glitter here.
Fucking hell.
I was probably a Vietnamese prison, I think. But, you know, let's allow that.
I'm not allowing that. I don't have to allow it. I'm not going to allow it. You can allow it. I'm not allowing it. The Thai prison bit in Bridget Jones 2 is very, very racist.
Mm.
Like, startlingly. So, it's not good. It's not good. Although Bridget Jones 2, Edge of Reason, does have 90s heartthrob Paul Nichols in it.
Paul Nichols.
Briefly, yeah. He was on EastEnders a long, long time ago, but he was also like he was like a teen heartthrob when I was like a preteen.
Right.
He was on this kids' TV show called The Biz, which was set in a stage school. And then he was on EastEnders for like a long time, for like years and years and years.
Okay, hang on. Can I tell you two things about Paul Nichols, because I've pulled him up?
Yes.
So first of all, his real name is Gerard Paul Greenhow.
Oh, yeah. Knew this.
And second of all, do you know what his character in EastEnders was called?
Joe Wicks.
Joe Wicks?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that would be more of a funny reveal.
No, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Joe Wicks. I'm here at the Queen Vic pub. I'm getting everyone to do jumping jacks and have a healthy meal of chicken and rice that they brought with them from home. I'm enjoying a Guinness Zero because it's low calorie and it's good for you when you're trying to keep fit and healthy. Okay, thanks, guys.
That is a really good impression of Joe Wick.
Getting bottled by Phil Mitchell.
I will tell you.
thank you.
I will say that. American listeners, Joe Wicks is a glorified PE teacher.
Yeah, hardware store proprietor and EastEnders character.
And EastEnders character and glorified PE teacher.
Yeah.
And yeah, he Joe Wicks, the character on EastEnders, not the glorified PE teacher, has a, in the course of his characterization, has this terrible psychotic breakdown. And I think Paul Nichols won an award for his portrayal of this young man in severe mental distress. But yeah, he was in Bridget Jones, Edge of Reason. He plays the guy who plants the drugs in their luggage in Thailand.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think he acts anymore. Like, the last thing I saw him in was in this extremely fun and extremely stupid TV show. I can't remember what it was called. Like, it had a stupid name as well. And it's about a team of, it's like a crime procedural, but it's about a team of forensic archaeologists.
Awesome.
And you know what? I think we should cover it.
Yeah.
If we can find a copy of it, it might be quite difficult to find. But Paul Nichols is in it, playing a deranged white supremacist who dresses up in a crusader costume and goes around the place attacking Muslims with a sword.
As one does.
That's the last thing I saw Paul Nichols in.
Okay. Well, I can also tell you that Paul Nichols has his own personal history with Thailand. In July 2017, Nichols was badly injured while on holiday in Thailand after falling from a waterfall in Koh Samui. As his mobile phone was broken, he was left stranded at the bottom of the waterfall for 3 days and only rescued by volunteer rescuers, police and medics after locals alerted police to the motorcycle he had travelled on, which lay abandoned nearby. He was later taken to hospital, suffering from broken legs and a shattered knee. Nichols' agent said he was recovering well.
Oh my God, that's awful.
3 days.
Poor guy.
It's sort of almost like a biblical experience.
Yeah. He didn't turn into a crusader as a result.
No, I don't. You really need your knees intact to go on a crusade, I would say. If anything, that would impede you in becoming a crusader.
That's like, that was one, that, yeah, that was one of Richard I's many, many excuses to Philip Augustus. Yeah. Like, no, you know what? My knees are acting up. My back's giving me a bit of, you know.
We're back into Maidley there. You need functional knees to go on a
functional crusade. Knees to go on a crusade. This is the second time this week I have brought up Philip Augustus.
Philip who?
Philip Augustus.
Who's Philip Augustus?
He was a medieval French king.
Oh, okay. Big Phil Augustus.
Big Phil Augustus. You know what? Big Phil Augustus. He wants to have a word with himself.
Mincy. I love the expression having a word with yourself, like you're in the mirror.
Mincy looking cunt.
with his foreign tart.
With his foreign tart.
Not foreign to him, to be fair. She's also French.
They loved foreign tarts, the medieval kings. It was their whole thing. It was their whole political plan.
Who doesn't enjoy a pastel de nata from time to time?
Marry a foreign tart. Oh, is that the foreign tart? The pastel de nata. Oh, I love a pastel de nata.
It's good, isn't it?
Oh, it's good. It's good.
Mincing about with your foreign tart.
eating custard puddings going, it's after 9. I can't possibly have a cappuccino.
Yeah. Seeing Phoebe in the street mincing about with her foreign tart. Right, yeah. And so we get the fight where, you know, it's high drama. There's a lot of CGI once again.
But it's not set in space. It's not set in space.
It's not set in space, as far as we know. There's a lot of CGI throughout the episode, to be honest. I mean, we've kind of stopped commenting on it now. But
it's true. We wouldn't know whether or not it was set in space because they never show you any view outside a window.
So well, yeah. I mean, for all we know, they fucking shot it in space and CGI'd in ancient Rome.
Well, it's a lot cheaper to shoot in space because you don't have to pay any ground rent.
Yeah, that is true. And he'd have to deal with gravity, of course.
You know, the most recent series of Sex and the City was shot in space.
Yeah, there's great tax cuts to shoot in space. That's the thing.
Yeah.
That would be fun if, like, you know, space had like a despotic regime like Saudi Arabia that was like desperately trying to get stuff shot there to like launder the reputation of space.
Part of the soft power of space.
Yeah, so like the 14th Bridesmaids movie has just got them all floating around a capsule. And they're like, this is crazy, a wedding in space.
There's only one Bridesmaids movie.
Oh, is there anyone?
Yeah.
Well, if space had anything to do with it, they'd commission a further 13.
I love Bridesmaids. I think it's a belter.
I've not seen it.
Have you not?
No.
Oh, it's delightful.
There you go. We're making Pat watch that next week.
And just not telling him.
Yeah.
As far as he's concerned, he's going to be talking about Spartacus episode 6. But you, me and Eleanor are going to be talking about Bridesmaids.
Yeah. I've just green screened in Bridesmaids over the top of Spartacus. They'll be like, this doesn't look quite right. But yeah, so we get the fight. You know, Crixus gets wounded. Eventually, Spartacus has his big moment. He manages to kill the big fucker, beheads him. You know, blood goes everywhere. But there's a bit where they cut to the gallery and they cut to John Hannah, John Hannah's wife, the other lady, Glabius's wife. And they are doing such like mid-coitus snarls. As they were, like, it's full on, like, it's so ridiculously sexual, the faces they're pulling, that I actually laughed out loud. I clapped.
You clapped? Like a little seal?
It's the bit where, like, Lucretia and Glabus's wife, they kind of, like, look at each other and then they look back at the arena and they're kind of like, And I was like, this can't be. And then there's also the guy who owns the big fucker. He's kind of sat off in a separate box and he's kind of looking on sort of insouciantly. Like he keeps like raising an eyebrow or doing a little half smile. But he's the only one who doesn't seem to be powerfully erotically affected by it.
Yeah. No, I'll go along with that. I think that's right. That sounds acceptable to me.
Yeah. And then that's kind of the end of the episode, really.
That is kind of the end of the episode. And then it rains. And then the crowd, who had been not so keen on Spartacus.
Spartacus.
He leads a slave rebellion, but only occasionally.
He's very inconsistent.
He's inconsistently rebellious. Sometimes he's very obedient.
Yeah. Spiral Atticus, and he's feeding all of his rebels with courgette pasta.
Yep.
It's keto, he says.
No, I don't have anything else.
No, fair enough.
I don't have any other Spartacus puns. Spartacus sleeps on a mattress on the floor. Mm-hmm. But he does do that because he's a gladiator. They all sleep on mattresses on the floor.
Yeah, it's very environment.
Yeah, none of them are leading kind of luxuriant lifestyles. They've all got a kind of gamer cave.
You know when you go back with some guy off Hinge and it turns out he's a gladiator and you get there and it's just got a mattress on the floor.
And a net.
Yeah. It's got to be. He's hanging all of his dirty clothes on a big trident in the corner.
You know, and he wears sandals. Mm. Yeah, the crowd had gone off Spartacus. And now they've gone back on him because as soon as he does in Prince Vigo, it starts to rain and the drought is over.
And the crowd goes wild.
The crowd does go wild. It's like that. It's like that Pepsi advert with Beyonce.
Yeah, it's so funny that John Hannah's in this.
Yeah,
on a great many levels, but also and this must be quite unusual for John Hannah, but he's by far and away the most famous person in it.
Lucy Lawless is famous, right?
Yeah, the name, but I can't really think of like what I would know Lucy Lawless from or like where I've ever seen. I wouldn't recognise her. She could walk past me in the street and I wouldn't know a thing. To quote Kiki Palmer. sorry to this woman.
Wait, isn't she Xena?
Oh, was she?
Yeah.
But that was a very that is Xena Warrior Princess is fucking Spartacus Blood and Sand coded.
Well, it came first. So, if anything, yeah, Spartacus Blood and Sand is Xena Warrior Princess coded.
Well, yeah, I mean, sure. But what I mean is they're both kind of like schlock. Like, they're not. God, she's also.
Xena is like, but Xena's like, parrot, like she's a demigod, isn't she? Like, it's not like, it doesn't purport to be historical.
God, she's been in a lot of shit as old Lucy Lawless.
Like what?
Well, she's Xena Warrior Princess, Spartacus, something called My Life is Murder, Hercules, the legendary.
Oh, she's in this weird thing where they, you know, when they start, when you know, when they combine, like do kind of collabs between two intellectual properties, some right. more successful than others. She was in this thing called Saw Patrol, where you got imprisoned by a dog dressed as a firefighter.
Right.
And it makes you set up a lick map. For it.
Two Spartacus movies, Parks and Rec.
She's in Parks and Rec.
Battlestar Galactica.
Who's she in Parks and Rec?
Ash versus Evil Dead. I don't know. Oh my God. She was born in New Zealand.
Yeah.
She's another secret Kiwi. Right.
Well, it's not that secret. She can barely bring herself to not do the accent.
I just haven't.
Well, the Kiwis are a proud people.
Oh, they sure are. That's why she begins every episode with the hacker.
Yes. I think that's all that happens in this episode.
Wait, her husband's called Garth Lawless.
No.
What a
off.
Name. I mean, no. they got divorced in 1995, but that's very funny.
No, I don't think so. I don't believe so.
Because her name is Lucille Frances Ryan. That's her real name.
Okay.
For a second, I was like, did Garth Lawless take her name? But no, clearly she's taken his name, but used it as her stage name.
To be fair, if I met somebody whose last name was Lawless, I would absolutely take their name if I married them. Wouldn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Milo Lawless. That's a name and a half.
It doesn't trip off the tongue, though.
Milo Lawless. Phoebe Lawless isn't bad.
Yeah, Phoebe Lawless is good. I like that for you.
Maybe I should change it.
Yeah.
I think I could get George to change his name to Lawless.
Yeah, Lawless George is great. That's like a cowboy name.
That is a cowboy name.
That's a capital name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So I think that's about it, really, isn't it?
I think that's about it.
Yeah. Thanks for... well, you're not a Patreon subscriber if you're listening to this. Because it's free. Well, you might be, but...
You might be.
This is a free one, so you're not exclusively so. So we're not going to thank you. But if you are a Patreon subscriber, thank you. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, here's what you could do. And then you could be in receipt of our thanks, which is sign up for the Patreon.
Yeah.
Five US dollars a bloody month. And let me tell you, at the current state of affairs, that's less money every month. So.
Yeah.
Because they're ruining America over there. And the economy's going with it. So. This is a better value proposition every month. It's twice as much Masters of Our Domain for increasingly little money.
Yeah.
How can you say no?
What a wonderful time it is to be paid in dollars.
A lovely time to be paid in dollars. So, yeah, please do sign up.
Pay us in dollars. Yeah, please. That would be nice.
Yeah. If more of you do it, it'll almost be as though the dollars we currently get aren't worth increasingly little. There's an idea. Sign up for that. There's loads of good stuff in that. There's also all the old Seinfeld bonus stuff, all the old movie corners, all the old What's the Deals.
Yeah. We might start redoing What's the Deals in the future. It's just difficult at the minute on account of this line.
There's a cornucopia of stuff over there.
There is a veritable cornucopia.
Yeah. So, yeah, check that out. We'll be back next week with not only Dr. Patrick Wyman, but also Ellen Yanniger and Luke from We're Not So Different.
Yeah. So there are going to be five people on mic next week. So
strap the fuck in.
All
right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.